day and welcome to the Norske Skog conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Tom Rogn. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon and welcome to the fourth quarter call from Norske Skog. Firstly, the CEO, Sven Ombudstvedt, will give a short introduction before we open up for Q&A.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just a few words about the fourth quarter 2012 before we go to the Q&A. We reported gross operating earnings of $327 million in the quarter, which is somewhat down from the third quarter, but overall, I guess 2012 has been relatively stable in terms of GOE. The quarters have seen relatively little fluctuation as opposed to the year before, where it was quite backloaded with stronger second half than first half. Two focus areas from our side. One is the reduction of debt, which has continued in the fourth quarter, down now to net interest-bearing debt of $6 billion from about $6.3 billion at the end of the third quarter, and for the full year down with roughly $1.8 billion. Over 3 years, the reduction in net interest-bearing debt of almost $4 billion, or about 40%. Strong cash flow still in the fourth quarter with further release of working capital, and obviously a focus area for us is to be as capital efficient as possible also going forward. Furthermore, improvements in operations, fixed cost has also continued in the fourth quarter. We're down to a run rate of about 850 million NOK, which will gradually come down towards 800 million per quarter, given the initiatives we already have implemented. From that onwards, we probably have to do even more with new initiatives. And finally, on the market side, obviously, there's still challenging environment in Europe and in Australia in particular, and with weak demand figures, maybe the end of the fourth quarter was somewhat exacerbated by the fact that customers expected price declines from the 1st of January, and they're drawing down inventory. On the cost side, I guess the guiding for variable cost inflation deflation is about zero, in other words, stable cost picture going forward. So as we've also maintained in the past, we will continue to run our operations and try to match supply demand as best as we can, and going into the first quarter, that means that we're also temporarily balancing, and particularly in the lightweight coated market in Europe, we're balancing supply and demand actively, as we've also communicated in the past. So with those few brief words of introduction, I will then open up for questions and answers.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now pause for just a moment to assemble the queue. We take our first question today from Lisa Barish of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I have a few questions, if I may. My first question relates to your newsprint outside Europe segment. I see that margins have improved quite a bit in Q4, and I was wondering if you think this is sustainable, if you expect to maintain kind of 20% EBITDA margins in newsprint outside Europe, particularly since Tasman closed after year end.
I guess it's correct that the operating margin newsprint outside Europe is quite high in the fourth quarter. We probably have slightly lower volumes and a lower operating rate in the quarter. Some of this is influenced by the, let's say, the preparation for stop at Tasman. So, but I still think that the fourth quarter was probably slightly higher than it otherwise would have been on some non-recurring items in Brazil, which was a positive variable cost element, tax recovery that we had. So you should probably expect to have a somewhat lower margin going forward on in terms of EBITDA margin.
Okay. And any willingness to clarify what somewhat lower means?
Well, I think we, in general, for the whole operations, we aim to go to be above 15% for the global operations, and we expect outside Europe to be higher than that. But the quarter-on-quarter, let's say, EBITDA margin can fluctuate significantly depending on say, special items and currency fluctuations, etc. But overall, the overseas operations should certainly be on the high end between 15 and 20, but then again, the whole company should be above 15%.
Okay. Wanted to get, I guess, more thoughts on a comment that you make in your Outlook slides where you say that industry-wide capacity closures supportive, you know, and particularly in light of Stora's announcement a few days ago. I was just wondering if you could, you know, provide some more color on how you think about the capacity that is the capacity shutdowns that have been announced now.
Yeah, first of all, I think it's positive and supportive that both capacity in the magazine segment with UPM's announcement and in the newsprint segment with Stora and Burgos announcements recently supports European balance. Also positively that these announcements seems to happen, or the actual effect of the announcements will happen relatively soon. So we see support already from the summer onwards of these closures. They happen most of them as machines inside mills, so it's probably easier to do it faster. And I think we see that positively. This is not necessarily enough to bring the market into the balance we strive for, but it certainly is a big step in the right direction. So I think out of these announcements, if we could, depending a little bit on the demand in the first half, but if we can see maybe one or two more machine closures in Europe, I think then we are more or less where we need to be in terms of capacity utilization.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We now move on to our next question from Rowan Clark of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I've got a few questions as well, please. To begin with, could you just update us on selling price discussions with customers in January? Contractually, what's happened there, please?
Yes, I have the fortune to have Mr. Jan Klaassen, our head of commercial operations, with me, so I will let him answer the price question.
Okay.
Yes, I think we have to make some distinctions here. First of all, like always, Europe doesn't move totally in parallel. Some markets are much further advanced in negotiations than others, and especially on the continent, we still have a lot of work to be done. I think that you can say that overall it's a challenging situation, and expect, of course, I would say, a slight decrease in the prices as we see it at the moment. I still think that the word slight is important here, but I think also that it is maybe, it's still too early to say, but I think it's maybe not as bad as some people want to have it. I think on the magazine side, we see that there is quite a good and stable demand for uncoated papers that also is reflected in the prices
and the negotiations here, so that's a
slightly different picture, or a different picture. On the coated side, we ourselves have seen that the necessity to take quite significant downtime, and I think that's hopefully support the market balance. I think that maybe covers it at this point.
Okay. And in terms of magnitude on overall on the newsprint side, are you thinking sort of mid-single digits or closer to double digits maybe decline?
2 to 3%.
Yeah, I think definitely no double digits, my goodness.
Okay. And on another issue, I'm just wondering if you have planned any discussions with your banks regarding your covenants in the medium term.
I think it's on the covenant issue. It's important to note that we did last year, in late 2011, we did a reset for 2012, and it's not. It would not be abnormal if we do a similar thing for 2013. We are now back from the first quarter on the original trajectory of the covenants. And I think that discussion is very natural. So obviously we have an ongoing and a good dialogue with our banks at any point in time. So I think it would not be an unnatural thing to discuss with them.
Right. So you could potentially be talking about covenants already. Is that fair?
I think we have talked about covenants as long as we have this facility. So I think it's a very honest, fluid and good relationship between the banks and the company on this, and we keep each other currently updated at all points in time.
Okay. And can you confirm there hasn't been a drawing on the revolver in Q1?
We have not used this facility a lot over the lifetime of the facility. I can confirm that it was undrawn at the year end, and it's there's no real reason, if you look at our normal trading balance, why we should use it now either. But I would not specifically confirm or not confirm at any point in time. It is not a month or a quarterly closing. Over the lifetime of this facility, we have not used it to a very large extent.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now move on to Eric Carlson of AKO Capital for our next question. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my question. Could you just remind us what assets you have left that are non-core that you might sell during 2013? Because you've been very good at selling non-core assets over the last couple of years. So just give us an update on what's left. Thank you.
Yeah, you would thank you for the question. You would remember from past discussions that we have inferred that some assets are more core than others, and obviously our two big operating areas are Australia and New Zealand and Europe. So the mills outside of Europe, we would obviously listen if there is a good price indication from willing buyers, which means that we have the Thailand operations, we have a third of the Malaysian operations, and we have the Brazilian operations. But it's equally clear that these are in our line of products, and we would obviously only contemplate a transaction if the price is right. Apart from that, the non-core asset basket obviously becomes smaller. There is very little real estate left, which we have basically done. So there may still be odd bits and pieces, but basically it's the assets I have described which could be up for discussion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now move on to Nitin Diaz of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a few questions. Most of these are numerical, so it should be fairly easy. In FY12, can you give us a sense of how much of cost savings was recognized in the P&L and also in Q4-12?
Well, if you talk about the fixed cost, you could say that there is still about, on an annual basis, about 200 million, which is left to be recognized of initiatives we have already taken. So if you imagine that we have 850 million NOX of fixed cost per quarter, you would expect if you do nothing else, everything remains the same. You should see about 800 million now coming through during the first half. Of course, we still aim to do other initiatives which would bring it further down, but those are the initiatives that we have ongoing.
Sorry, just to understand that statement clearly. So you said if you don't do anything from now on, you'll get an incremental 200 million cost savings in FY13.
Correct.
Fixed cost savings.
Yep.
How much did you achieve in 2012, i.e. how much was recognized in the P&L in 2012? And also in the fourth quarter, fixed cost savings.
Yeah, maybe Tom Rong, you can answer. Head of Investor Relations can answer the...
Yeah, the run rate when we went into this year was a bit more than 1 billion per quarter. So basically it stepped down gradually through the year. And obviously it was another step in the fourth quarter when Parenko was not any longer part of our group.
Okay, so if I look at your presentation, I think one of the slides where you give your fixed cost, should we assume around about 1.2 billion of fixed cost savings was recognized in the P&L? Would that be a good assumption?
That's a bit aggressive on the actual year as such. It's about 600 million, I guess. So of course the run rate is higher because that is the year as such. So what was recognized in the accounts was probably more like 600 million.
Okay, understood. I have the same question for Q4 12, but I'm happy to take that offline. And following up on 2013, is there more to do from the existing program other than the 200 million which you will get because of existing initiatives already completed? Is there anything more to do on the existing program, one? And two, are there any new programs that you have planned, and what could be the magnitude from both of those, please?
I think we obviously have a lot of initiatives ongoing, but this is what we have, which has already been initiated, and whatever needs to come on top, we still would have to start and implement them throughout the year. But obviously there's always improvement programs ongoing. We have, for instance, in Norway, there's about the 5% demanning across the company, which is presently in progress. But I think in terms of what could be done, of course, there's a law of diminishing returns also here, but I still think we can do more, but we would be a bit hesitant to put figures on it for the time being, as we haven't really any solid plans to back it up. But clearly there are still things that we can do in terms of efficiencies across the company.
Okay, and understood. That's helpful. So just to be clear, I mean, yes, you have more programs. You can't put a number on it, but so far as the programs that have been done, you should get 200 million in 2013.
That is the correct understanding, yes.
Okay. In terms of cash interest, you've talked of about a 150 million run rate per quarter in your presentation. Should we assume that the full year cash interest expense would be around 600 million in that case?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. On working capital, I know you've done a very good job this year and a continuation of last year. Do you think you can reduce working capital further, or again, is there this law of diminishing returns which apply?
I think as with the fixed cost, the working capital, these are continuous focus areas that you can always probably improve your efficiencies. And of course, as the company is now smaller than it was at the start of 2012, with the 3 mills out, we obviously have a slightly different configuration. We also have the Australian paper machine, or the New Zealand paper machine closure coming into the first quarter of this year. So there's always an opportunity to look again at your working capital. So I think as our CFO said during the morning presentation, we would aim in the first quarter, which seasonally historically have had increases in working capital, we will aim to not have those. We managed to do that in 2012. We should clearly manage to do that also in 2013. And as the year progresses, I would still think there is opportunity to reduce the working capital further. So, yes, there is still something to be done here, but as with the fixed cost, we cannot really put a number on it today. And it's also a matter with a smaller company. The actual numbers will be smaller than they have been in the past.
Yeah, that's helpful. On CapEx, your number was fairly high in the fourth quarter. I mean, a bit higher than last year. Was there any specific reason, or was that the plan? I mean, was that your plan all the time?
That's related to the fact that we have started the two investment projects that we have announced, the machine conversion at Boyer in Australia and the TMP, or the soft groundwood, stone groundwood over to TMP in the Saugbrugs mill in Halden. So these two programs have started. We are still within the guided 500 million for the year. Next year we're guiding 100 million up to 600 million because of these two main investments. So it's a planned profile, and also an additional comment to the Boyer conversion is that we have, as also mentioned this morning, we have an influx of the grants from the Australian government comes in second half 2013, so the CapEx will be a little bit higher now for some quarters.
Okay, but because you've started the Boyer project in the fourth quarter of 2012, should we assume that the 13 run rate would be lower than 600? Because I think you had guided for 600, assuming Boyer would start.
We guided 500 million in 2012. We landed at 492, and we guided for 600 in 2013, which then you should then assume that we are around 600. And then you will get the net benefit from 2014 onwards when the conversion is on stream.
Okay. Would you be able to give a magnitude of the benefit, a rough ballpark figure?
I don't think that we can give any estimates on EBITDA impact, but obviously there is a positive impact both from the Cybrix project and from the Boyer project that we would be hesitant today to give any guidance, because then it means that we have to give guidance on currency and et cetera into 2014, which I would not really like to do.
Fair enough. Thank you. And my last question, I'll go back into the queue, I promise. Any guidance for cash restructuring costs or one-off costs which you think about in FY13?
There is not so many things left now which has been. It's only the... we have, of course, made the provisions for the restructuring in New Zealand, which some of it will be paid out also into 2013, but a lot of it was done and passed through our books in 2012. Otherwise, there is not a lot. There is always something, obviously, in terms of demanding costs, but there is not it's not a significant amount.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We now take our next question from Jayant Kandalan of Lucro. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my questions. Most of them have been answered, but I just had a couple more left. Firstly, could you just confirm to us on your covenants whether they'll be triggered on drawal or even without a drawal on the RCA?
Can you repeat your question, please? You're very muffled on the phone there.
My first question basically was that on your covenants, do they trigger when the RCF is drawn, or are they triggered even without drawing on the RCF?
The covenants are the covenants in a sense, and we do not comment really on the if we draw or not. We have to comply with the covenants or reset the covenants. So the covenants are applicable to the facility.
Okay, fair enough. My second question was with regard to your upcoming debt maturities. I mean, I'm sure you'd have some strategy in place. So if you could just kind of tell us more about it.
No, I think, first of all, the maturity, there's no real major maturities in 2013, so they are coming at about a short billion, 14, 15, 16, and then a somewhat bigger one in 2017. And so far we have been dealing with the maturities as and when they come, so the cash conversion has been relatively high in 2010, 11, 12, and we were able to deal with the 11s and the 12s in that period. So for the time being, there is no immediate plan for any other actions, but obviously we continue to monitor actively all the financing options that we have, and it's a matter of finding the balance between the right timing when the certain markets are open or not, bond markets, bank markets, other type of financing. And so I think we have this year the luxury that we have no big maturities coming due, and we will spend the time wisely, as always, to evaluate the interface between what sort of conditions we can and should get, and having the liquidity to run the business, and at the same time looking at what sort of maturity profile is conducive to the business we're in. So I don't think that we have any specific news on that today, but we're obviously something that is continuously being monitored and worked on from our side.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you so much. My next question is basically in terms of the earnings for 2013. I know it's difficult to kind of pinpoint any per quarter kind of an earnings level or EBITDA level, but I was just trying to understand from your statements that you kind of said there was stable input costs and demand was going down, and you're not really thinking of getting a price increase. Rather, you're expecting a low single-digit price fall. So am I to assume that amidst all this, the earnings are going to further reduce, assuming that you don't have any more fixed cost improvement programs in place?
I think you are right to assume that the transparency we have, which is basically the first quarter, is that we have lower volumes and slightly lower prices, relatively stable input costs. Where we don't have much transparency is as the year progresses, second quarter, and certainly not into the second half. What we see is that there is a positive momentum in terms of capacity closures in the industry, so I think certainly the longer into the year you go, the more uncertainty, of course, but there are positive signs as you come. But the guidance, particularly for the short end and the first quarter, is indeed that the volumes will probably not be higher than the fourth quarter, and the prices are down somewhat. And that is probably the best we can give in terms of guidance today.
Okay, great. If I could just, I think I kind of missed the comment. So you basically said quarter on quarter the volume should be lower, right? Compared to Q4.
I think we're taking downtime actively in the first quarter, but we also did that in the fourth quarter. So I don't think the production volumes for the company will be very much different, because we already took about the 10% downtime in the fourth quarter, and that's roughly what we're also indicating that we're doing for the first quarter. So the volumes will probably not be very different. The variable cost is more or less the same. The fixed cost is coming down somewhat, and the pricing is coming down 2 to 3%. That's a brief summary of the guidance we've given so far.
Perfect. Understood. Next question is basically on your currency headwinds. I mean, in Q4 it was quite severe, drove quite a bit of downward EBITDA, but I know it's difficult to kind of give a guidance, but at least if you're looking at Q1 currently to date, what kind of movement are you seeing of the krona versus the euro, please?
Currency movements?
I'm not sure we're the correct people to be giving currency guidance, so I think you're better off looking at forward rates on the krona than giving estimates.
I think the only maybe slight comment we can give is obviously that in January the NOK did increase against or appreciated against some of our main currencies, but of course we are extremely sensitive to relatively small movements, and particularly towards the end of the quarter. So I think it's not meaningful for us to be very, very sort of specific on currency movements, but we're particularly for the conversion of the debt, the end currency of the quarter is very important, just to keep that in mind.
Okay, perfect. And the last question, rather just a clarification from one of your earlier comments, please. On the disposals to an earlier question, I think you did mention a few assets, but I kind of the comment got lost in transit for me. So if you could just tell me, because I could just barely hear the Brazilian assets, but I think you mentioned about three assets there, if I'm not wrong.
The ones we have commented on before, which are not directly related to our two main areas of operations, those three are Malaysia, Thailand, and Brazil. But of course, as I also said, these are paper assets which are in our product lines, and we will only, of course, contemplate this if we have a reasonable price idea.
Okay, understood. Thank you so much. Thanks for your time.
We now move on to our next question from Cecil Breaks of Brigade Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for taking my question. Two, if I may. One actually on I think just following on from the previous point in terms of non-core assets. I was just curious what you see right now in the market in terms of sort of valuations per ton of capacity. Because I guess you achieved a pretty good price when you sold BioBio. I was just wondering, and obviously Perenco you can't really compare with that given the I guess the location, the performance of the plant, but perhaps you could give me a bit of an indication of where you see that right now depending on the geography.
I think there's not, of course, a lot of transactions in this business, so you don't have a very liquid market for it. Obviously, the assets we talk about, they do generate on their own. They're all relatively small, but they do generate a reasonable margin, and I think we would be looking at price ranges which are indicating of that. So in other words, we need a certain multiple of EBITDA. You're absolutely right that the Parenco transaction is a different type of transaction, so you should not necessarily look at capacity fees for that. But we basically need to have a reasonable EBITDA multiple, which is, in our view, is accretive to the company. So that's basically what we're looking at. We're not looking at, I think, the per ton multiple is a little bit more a resultant of a calculation, so it's more an EBITDA multiple we're looking at, and that needs to be at a certain level. But that could also be different for the different companies. But I think your reference to BOBO is not completely out of line in sort of an indication of how we think.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And then I was just curious about, I guess, how you guys manage your NOK exposure, or whether you do at all. So maybe you could give me a bit of an idea of your strategy there.
I think you can certainly say that we do manage the NOK exposure. So you have, there is a cash flow hedge in place for all our main currency exposures, which would tend to delay sort of a negative currency impact on the competitiveness of the company. So you could say that we try and manage to delay it by maybe 6 to 9 months. Obviously, the NOK exposure, the significant NOK exposure is the production facilities in Norway, which are almost roughly a quarter of our total capacity. And over time, over 10 years now, that has basically deteriorated in terms of the NOK appreciation, which has been fairly constant over time. So I think that the only thing you can really do there is to be as efficient as you can and try to improve the competitiveness. So we cannot really do it. So there is, of course, a balance sheet, a hedge effect by the fact that we have debt in all the currencies, which of course is effective, but in real terms, it's the NOK appreciation is obviously a negative for the Norwegian pounds. But maybe a slightly long-winded answer to a simple question, but there is a cash flow hedge in place, which is running, and there is the debt on the balance sheet.
And just to be clear, the cash flow hedge is for the total amount that you have in terms of NOK exposure, i.e. for your production capacity in Norway, or is it for a lower amount?
It also includes Australia and other currencies where we are exposed. So there is a... There's an active cash flow hedge which looks at the cash flow projections and try to hedge them as long as you can, but effectively it's difficult to do it more than maybe 6 to 9 months.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Patrick Kersting of Bank of America Merrill Lynch has our next question. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, and just trying to focus a bit more on what's going on the volume side of things. If I look at the last few months, and October was obviously slightly positive, it looked like catching up from September, but then, you know, going back into negative on November, and particularly December was very weak on newsprint. And at the same time, it looks like the export levels industry-wide have started to slow down on their growth rate, almost flat in December. Can you tell me what the outlook is going into this year and what you're expecting for this year in volumes, and whether, you know, December is a trend to look at going forward, or whether there was any kind of one-off effects that made December look particularly weak?
I think I will let Jan Klaassen elaborate a little bit, but it's clear that December had some destocking at customers because most people expected a price decrease from the new year onwards. And on the exports, just a short comment for the industry, that we're running on relatively high exports out of Europe, so it's probably more a matter of netbacks and margins rather than demand. But Jan, I'll let you elaborate on it.
Yeah, I think it's... I'd start on the other side. I start with the exports. I would say that... there is a certain seasonality in the export negotiations, especially when it comes to Asia.
And I think that overall we will probably see also in this year quite a large or quite significant exports from Europe. Markets overseas are quite stable and healthy in some parts actually. So I think that December more or less was not that that special for the export development. I think that you can see that in other Decembers as well. But of course the rate is high and it's easy to see that with the developments otherwise we will probably see not much more of exports. So I think growth in exports is probably not to be seen so much. When it comes to the European side, clearly what the CEO said is preparation from customers to soften the suppliers and make it tougher negotiations. I think that's a part of it. And I also you have to look a little bit on the different grades, and I think that when you do that, I also see there that there is some one-time effects, and I definitely would not see that December as a general trend or a trend change.
Okay, so just to make sure that I understood correctly, on the export side, you're expecting good exports for this year, but not necessarily the same rate of growth as last year.
That's correct.
And then have you got a number in your mind where you think volumes are going for this year when you're planning your production? I know that store has taken 3.4% off, but that's kind of half the run rate of the declines, I suppose, or even a bit less than that when you're looking at the domestic market only. Where do you see that going, and what are you factoring in for 2013 on volumes?
Yeah. I think, first of all, on where are we type of picture, I think that the export growth that you have mentioned have basically meant that the shipments from European producers in Ukraine is about down about 5% 2012, while the market in total, including East Europe and all newsprint grades, is down 9-10%, which means that the capacity outtake on newsprint from Stora and from Burgo means that we have, if you assume that the exports are stable at this level in 2013, we're roughly in balance with those. So, but of course, we still expect a certain decline of consumption also in 2013, which is more maybe the structural and still a weak macro in Europe. So there is still a need for, let's say, a machine or two to be taken out. So we still probably plan realistically to have utilizations in sort of the mid to high 80s rather than what we would normally like to have above 90% if you look at newsprint. In the magazine side, uncoated magazine is somewhat better, partly because the markets did not really fall that much in 2012, and also that there are capacity cuts on the way both in Sweden and the two UPM machines. So I think that the balance for super calendar is okay. Lightweight coated is probably the area where we take most of our deliberate downtime now, did in the fourth quarter and also will do in the first quarter, where we try to for market reasons, balance as good as we can. So we're probably on the lightweight coated itself in Europe, we probably run in sort of the low to mid 80s when we look at the production. Also here, I think you can assume a structural decline of a couple of percentage points, and then maybe slightly, still slightly negative impacts from the European macro situation.
Okay, no, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now move on to Theodoros Stamos of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a couple of questions. First, on the accounts receivable securitization facility, is that something you're still looking into, or have you guys pretty much shelved that?
I think this is something that we have looked into several times over the past couple of years, as you know, and we have, this is sometimes it's open, sometimes it's not, and we haven't found it. So I think it's fair to say that we are maybe spending more time on other aspects than that.
Okay, and then another question is kind of a bit strange maybe, but we had an Italian company kind of take us all off guard here in our market over the last couple of weeks. I'm just wondering, it looks like there's a similar concept in Norway whereby if your equity falls below a certain level, your book equity, that the board has a legal responsibility to initiate proceedings of some sort of restructuring. I'm wondering, do you guys monitor that? Are you aware of that? Is that something that's ever discussed at board meetings?
I think, first of all, we're very well aware of all regulations applicable to us in Norway, and we have a good governance on that, both from the legal side and from the accounting side. So yes, we are indeed aware of it. We're also not anywhere near any equity levels where some of these rules are applicable for the time being. So
okay.
Clearly we are, if you think about the impairment and the effects of equity, et cetera, we have on all rules, we have a very high degree of competence and alertness on these issues.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We now take a question from Martin Melby of ABG in Oslo. Please go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon. You've previously given some rough guidance on the EBITDA for this company, 1.5 to 2 billion NOK. And then given that you now say the company is much smaller, what should we be looking for short-term and mid-cycle?
I think what we've said in the past is that I think the configuration of the company should be, and if you look at the EBITDA margin where we should be at 15% or above, you will then see a number that starts with 2 for EBITDA. That we have said, and we still say it, the big sensitivity is price. And today, I think our cost picture is on sort of a mid-cycle level. If you look at fiber and energy, price is still below a mid-cycle level in Europe, which means that it's basically we need to see, in order for that to happen, we need to see sort of a normalization of European macro combined with the closures. Of course, we have seen announcements of closures now, which will bring us closer to a desired utilization rate level. So I still think that we can maintain that, but it's clear that it's where we need to be over time as a company, rather than any specific guidance for any specific period of time.
Okay, second question. I missed the first part here, but the newsprint price starting this year, and how long are these contracts for you guys?
Well, as usual, we are working on shorter contracts. We are looking, first of all, at quarterly, but I have to admit that we also have some six-month contracts.
If you missed the price comment,
we are looking into what do you call it? The low single digit
decrease.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you. We now move on to Rebecca Clements of Investec for our next question. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Not too many left here from my end. The first question I have, though, relates to slide 27. You reference improvements in the regulatory framework as part of the management focus. What is this with regard to?
This is basically Norwegian regulations mainly related to transportation of timber. It means that we cannot use normal international size trucks to transport the timber. It seems like maybe a petty issue, but altogether these issues are about 200 million NOK on our bottom line compared just to Swedish regulations, which should not be impossible to implement in Norway. So the reason why we bang on a bit about this is that it is a serious issue for us, and I think forest-based industries in Norway need, say, at least not to be disadvantaged in this. So, and the figure, obviously, as you can read from our accounts, 200 million is a significant figure for us.
Okay, I think I actually mentioned or asked you about that previously. So, nothing's changed on that front.
No, I think we have some traction on this issue from the authorities, so we know that they're working on it. But I think we are in a phase now where sort of good intentions are being written down on a piece of paper, and that is always the critical phase. So we are not the actual regulations will not be diluted too much. So we need to reinforce the message in this respect.
Okay, and then also on that same slide, you talk about improving margins, but within the context of active capacity management. Is it fair to say that when you are taking downtime, that obviously is negative for your fixed cost absorption? So even though you've taken out fixed costs, there would be sort of a potentially negative impact on margins, at least for the next quarter or two, if you are taking more downtime than usual?
That is correct, but at the same time, the fixed cost is now, in general, let's say, less than a fifth of the total cost basis. So yes, on a general basis, this is correct, but it's probably now, historically speaking, less of an effect than it has been. But clearly, every ton you don't produce from a mill fixed cost basis is, means that the other tons have to carry a higher fixed cost burden.
Okay, and regarding the closures that have been announced, would you expect those to start impacting the first quarter, and how long would do you think it will be for it to have a full impact from an industry perspective?
The closure we have in New Zealand is impacting now from early January. The competitors' actions, of course, is difficult for me to be precise on, but what I read about it is that it will have full effect from the summer, meaning from the 1st of July, practically speaking, in commercial terms.
Okay. And then my last question regarding any covenant discussions. From your perspective as a company, do you prefer to sort of take a review of covenants with a sort of 1 to 4 quarters forward basis, or would you rather do something that would adjust your covenants for the remaining life of that facility?
I think in reality what we discussed last or end of 2011 for 12 and what we achieved a one-year reset. I think then if you are realistic in not only wishing but realistically wishing, I think a year's covenant reset would be okay, but I think of course we would like to not have this discussion for the last 2 quarters of the facility. So from our side, of course, we would like to reset it for the rest, but we also know that the banks work in calendar years, so I think we can live with either, but of course it's less work if we can reset the remainder of the facility.
Do you feel comfortable, given your ability to, I mean, I realize that there's, you don't have a crystal ball here, but do you feel comfortable that you would be able to currently come up with 4 quarters worth of covenant reset levels, and you'd be comfortable with that? You don't foresee any, you know, that the transparency is so limited that you wouldn't be comfortable being able to forecast 4 quarters?
I think we have, this year, we have one luxury, of course, is that there is no big maturities in 2013, and we have a reasonable ability to generate cash even under relatively difficult circumstances. So I think the liquidity situation is reasonable. Of course, neither the banks nor we want to have a situation where we come into this discussion at many points in time, and I think sort of an annual exercise is more than enough in this respect. So obviously, we have a joint interest with the banks to make sure this is as smooth and well functioning as possible. So I don't foresee. I'm not going to repeat what our previous CFO said about this, that he was relaxed, but it's clearly also maybe not the most important item on my mind every day.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now move to a question from Priya Vishnavatan of Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you guys for taking the questions, and I beg your pardon if some of these have already been covered before as I joined late. Is there anything outstanding on the RCF at this point of time? Because we noticed that you drew knock 110 million of new loans this quarter. And I have a couple of follow-ups, if I may. Thank you.
What we can say is that at the year end, there was no drawing on the RCF, and over the life of the facility, we haven't really been using it to a very large extent. It's meant to be a facility for uses of let's say, unusual movement, for instance, in working capital or interest payments that are lumped in certain parts of the year, mainly in June for our purpose. So I think that you would not be too surprised if that is not used too often, but we cannot specifically comment on any point in time.
Sure. When are you due for the discussion, annual discussion with the banks, if I can clarify?
I think we have an ongoing relationship, so we talk to them on an ongoing basis. I shouldn't say every minute, but there is probably some contact on a daily basis with the banks on us for some matters.
Sure. Okay. So you are having an ongoing discussion because obviously the covenant headroom right now is running quite thin at the end of this quarter potentially.
But that discussion would have been there in any case. I think we have had throughout the life of the facility and even with the last facility before that, there is a relatively tight dialogue. Of course, we keep them updated on our progress and they they keep us updated on what happens on their side. So I think that's it's a natural and mature banking relationship.
Perfect. Just a couple of questions on your liquidity. What is the minimum cash balance that you think you need to run the business given the downscaling that you've done over the last year or so? And also, I have a question on the Perenco proceeds, if I may.
In the past, we have guided at about 500 to 700 million of free liquidity, so a good level to have, which is maybe a comfortable level to run. And I don't think that, despite the downsizing, that figure has probably not changed too much. We still have, let's say, payments of a certain size for salary runs and timber procurement, etc. So I still think about 500 to 700 million is a good figure to think about.
Okay, perfect. My last one on the Perenco proceeds. The last time I think we had discussed, and you had mentioned something like €30 million is what you expected from proceeds from that sale. But the proceeds that seem to have actually come in this quarter are, you know, markedly lower. Can I just check if you know there's something that got captured in working capital, or are there some part of the proceeds that you expect to receive later, or why is the balance any different from €30 million or €120 million?
The total release was guided to be €30 million. That was somewhat lower, not significantly, but somewhat lower because of a weaker than anticipated performance of Perenco in the third quarter. But the accounting treatment is in several items, so it's not so easy to read it straight out of it. And there was also a disposal of both Perenco and Reparco, our recovered paper operation, so you cannot probably easily read out exactly what it was.
Okay. So everything that needed to come from Perenco to Perenco is in the books already,
no further. The only link we still have to Perenco is that we have two small service agreements, with them, which will run for still a few months, but then from a financial point of view, everything is done.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you for my question. Thank you.
Thank you. We move on to Linus Larsson of SEB. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much and good afternoon. Just wanted to come back on the topic of capacity management. You mentioned, Sven, I think that there might be a need for one or two more newsprint machine closures in Europe. And I wonder what's your thinking around that, looking at your own portfolio. You are taking a bit of temporary downtime, but could that actually evolve into something more permanent during the 12 months to come?
I think the answer to that question is yes. Rune Jessing already mentioned this morning that we're looking at that clearly across Europe, and I think there's a couple of machines newsprint, but I think there's maybe also be a couple of machines on the magazine side. And it's clear that we do a continuous monitoring of this situation. So from let's say, more temporary downtime or market stops, I think there is it's more or less the same ongoing evaluation on a permanent need for capacity. And clearly, the Norwegian mills today are running under very difficult circumstances with very low profitability. And it's also equally clear that the European magazine segment is weak. So we would not be telling the truth if we did not say that we were monitoring this on a continuous basis. Then if it happens, what happens, etc., is still too early to guide on, but it's clear that when we talk about active capacity management, it also means that it could be permanent closures in the next 12 months.
And you highlight Norway and the magazine segment. Is that deliberate? That's the criteria in that.
It's unlikely that we will shut down Gold Bay. That's at least in the very short term.
Yeah. And would you more probably close single machines or a full mill? Do you have any philosophy around that?
I think what we have done, in, for instance, in Australia and New Zealand now, is to take down machines inside of mill sites in Tasman. And I've also noticed, I'm sure you've noticed also, that both Kvarnsveden and Hylte are, and even Halstavik are taking out single machines in multiple machine sites. So I think that's probably also a reflection that it's not so obvious that full mill sites should go anymore. Having said that, of course, from a more theoretical point of view, closing full mill sites gives more a fuller or a better effect on fixed costs.
Mm-hmm. That's great. May also, could you explain why the non-European business performed so well in the fourth quarter?
First of all, it's important to note that in Brazil with PISA, we have had a turnaround 2010-2011, so compared to the past, it's now PISA is performing also, of course, helped by a weaker Brazilian reais. PISA is performing above average in the segment, while it was in the past performing below average. So that is part of the explanation, and then there is a one-off tax recovery, which is recorded as a reduction in variable costs in Brazil in the fourth quarter, which also helps the gross operating margin in that segment. So it is the fourth quarter has a higher gross operating margin than what we would probably see in a more normal quarter. But at the same time, Brazil is performing relatively well for also. So that's probably the main reasons.
How big was the one-off?
Yeah, that you can ask that many times. You probably won't get it. The reason why we're not disclosing it is at the any year end and probably any quarter, there are several one-offs. And we also have one-offs of a negative character this quarter, mainly related to write-off of or write-downs of inventory values, as we see some price weakening and some products which have already been shipped out. So I think there is always positives and negatives. So you can say the positive is mainly outside Europe. The negative is in other segments this quarter.
And then just a final question on the restructuring and the investments that you are making in Australasia. Will those measures have some effects on your ongoing profitability over the quarters to come? Is there something that we should be aware of?
No, I think the of course 2013, the investment in Boyer is being done and is not completed before 2014, so there will be for that investment there will neither be any, let's say, positives or negatives in the GOE, and there will also be no real disturbances in the operations. As far as I can see, there is a little bit of disturbance in both the fourth quarter and in the first quarter with the actual machine closure at Tasman. So Tasman is probably slightly lower than it would be in a normal segment. But I think, in general, most of this restructuring is done without really any direct effect on the operations.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We now have a follow-up question from Eric Carlson of AKO Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thanks a lot for taking my questions. Just assuming that demand decline in Europe continues at roughly the pace you've seen recently, and that one or two more machines is closed before in the first half of the year, i.e. making the market more imbalanced, do you think that's enough to see price increases in the half-year negotiations, or does that just maintain the status quo with current prices?
I think what we see today is that the machine closures announced are clearly supportive for the second half negotiations. Then, as you indicate yourself, the big unknown is the actual market demand in the first half year. And there are several factors impacting that, including the destocking in December, and of course also the general macro environment in Europe. So I think it's early to say. The only reflection we can make today is that these announcements obviously are supportive for the market balance going, and since most of them will happen during the second quarter, then this is an effect basically from July.
Okay, thank you.
you. We take a question from Ankit Gupta of Amber. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I just need a clarification on, like, are you looking for a certain EBITDA multiples for selling your non-core assets? Or is it will be in a, like, a individual basis?
I think you're right that we look at EBITDA multiple as the most important aspect. It would be wrong to say that there is a general EBITDA multiple that we necessarily look at. This would vary a little bit by the position the mill would have or whatever. But it is basically an EBITDA multiple. But it is not obviously any single number or any single metric. But that is probably the key point.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you for taking the question.
Thank you. We take a further question from ID Kearney of GLG. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask about the capacity closures at one of your competitors in Russia, Kondopoga. Are you expecting that to these facilities to stay closed? Is that factored into your sort of outlook for the year, or do you see that they may restart at some point? And it was a sizable closure. I mean, it's over 500,000 tons.
Yes, it's a major player, obviously, in Europe and overseas, I think. It's fair to say that so far we've seen the physical effects of it mainly in the overseas markets, as the remaining machine at Kondopoga seems to go to Europe still. Obviously we would not be negative to see a permanent closure of Kondopoga. At the same time, we know that the Russian state of Karelia is part owner in Kondopoga, and we know that they have certain guarantees for running the machine, which is still running. And I think they would also, as a lot of paper companies are doing, they would also look at attracting investors to possibly convert Kondopoga into other type of products. But we have not so far factored in the full closure of Kondopoga, and we have not factored in really that it will stay down either. So far, a full closure is certainly an upside, and even today's operating rate at Kondopoga is an upside compared to our forecast.
Okay. So basically, if they do convert, that there's would probably be a decent positive for the balance of the market.
I think, without speculating too much on other people's assets, I think probably the value of Kondopoga is probably mainly in the wood supply for other activities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a follow-up from Priya Vishnavatan from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. Just on the the unrelated asset sales that you spoke about. Just can I check on the valuation? You know, for example, when you sold BOBO, you think the Chilean valuation is still relevant for, say, when you try to sell Brazil, or should we look for something 10% lower, 20% lower? What would be an indicative number? And since we've been speaking about it for the last 12 months, I think we've heard about this for a year since you sold Brazil. Is there discussions that you've had, or how close or how far are we from any transactions at all? Can you give us some color on that? And I have a follow-up. Thank you.
I think in general, all these mills have their own sort of positives and negatives, and I think that needs to come into any evaluation. Then, as I said, we're only entertaining values which we think are accretive to Norske Skog, and I think we would then not be able to comment on when or if or whatever happens. It's not obviously a very liquid market, so there needs to be a buyer and a seller meeting, and I think we cannot give any guidance if or when this could happen.
Okay. I just have a follow-up on the bond buybacks. I think you've been doing about 8 to 9 million euros per quarter in the last two quarters or so. Is that a run rate that you're still comfortable with, given where liquidity is at this point of time? Or should we expect something different?
The bond buybacks are in as the nature of the bond buybacks, of course, is opportunistic, because you have two aspects to balance out. One is the company's liquidity, as you indicate, and secondly, it's also the discounts, the bonds, and the availability of of bonds at a certain discount. So we look always at these factors, and we look at the yield rate when we look at it, and it's less in the fourth quarter than it was earlier in the year. Also, of course, driven by the fact that the bond spreads have narrowed in the period. So I think this is impossible to give a guidance on, and it will certainly not be any standard run rate for this. It's highly dependent on both internal factors and certainly external factors.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. At this stage, we have no further questions in the queue.
I think since we are well over an hour, I think we will end the call at this point in time.
Okay. Thank you all for your attention.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.